Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. And if you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener Podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Now let's get growing. Welcome to the show today. I'm super excited to introduce a guest that I actually met when I was over in Paris, France. There was this agricultural expo that I tried to go to. Well, I did go to. And one of the very first booths I came across was this awesome greenhouse outside that had the first aquaponics system I've ever seen. And so, of course, I had to be curious, and I went inside and talked to the people there. And my guest today is Kevin Morgan Rothschild from My Food, and he's going to tell us more about what great program they've got going. So welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you, Jackie. As you said, my name's Kevin, and I'm an American. I'm living in Paris, right outside Paris, and I came here to do my master's degree, and as part of my end of studies internship, I'm helping launch a startup that is creating greenhouse solutions for individuals that run on that use vertical aquaponic systems and permaculture beds. And the idea is that it's a turnkey solution for people who want to grow all their own fresh food pretty easily using our computer system that we've developed, that we're in the process of developing.
Excellent. And it's the coolest system. Wait till you see pictures of it and you hear some more about it. I totally want one. I'll let you explain kind of. All right. But first, I do kind of always like to ask my guests about like your very first gardening experience. Like, what was your first gardening experience? Like, were you a kid, an adult? Yeah. Who were you with? What'd you grow? Did you grow anything?
Yeah, for me, it's a funny question because you could say I definitely was not born with a green thumb, although I was always really interested in gardening. When I was a kid, we grew up in the woods in Massachusetts, and my parents always told me there was no sun, we can't grow anything. So I tried. I went to a local garden center with my mom, and I was like, oh, broccoli, I want to grow broccoli. So I remember buying a broccoli plant. And then I, put it in the soil, and then it died, and that was a little discouraging. So I don't think I continued gardening for a little bit after that, but I ended up getting back into it in college as I got interested in urban agriculture, and I've been gardening pretty intensively for the past 4 or 5 years now.
How does somebody get interested in agriculture in college? What brought that on?
I would say the first way it brought on is I was majoring in urban studies and urban planning, and but I was taking mostly sociology classes, and I did a semester in Latin America, and they had a rural sociology class offered at the University of Buenos Aires. And I had already taken urban sociology, so I was like, why don't I take rural sociology? And that sort of first sparked my interest in agriculture in general. And then when I got back to New Orleans, I ended up interning with an organization that was helping Latin Americans in the New Orleans area start urban gardens, and it was called the Latinos Farmers Co-op. And from there, I ended up getting interested in the concept of aquaponics and started working on a project my senior year. This was back in 2011.
Oh, okay. Well, I love all of that because I'm always encouraging people to go to college, like even if you don't know what you want to do, just to, because you find a lot of things that you didn't even know existed there once you get there. And just how crazy, you went to all these different countries, Buenos Aires, and now you're in Paris, and just great experiences. So I think you're going to inspire people already that are just tuning in. So then do you want to tell us a little bit about like organic gardening and kind of what that means to you, or earth-friendly gardening? Or
sure. So for me, you know, I've been recently getting into the concept of permaculture, which obviously is almost the same thing as organic gardening. Although I probably shouldn't. There may be some people who know more than me who listen to this podcast who might tell you differently. But for me, I really got interested in permaculture, the idea that we can be growing food without pesticides and using, instead of creating a monoculture when we grow, using having a large diversity of crops in our system, and the idea of improving soil. Obviously, we don't do that with aquaponics per se, but the idea that we could be gardening without polluting the earth and avoiding potentially carcinogenic polluted soils sounds like a great option. So it's really, I guess, the way I see for the gardening that doesn't hurt, you know, the planet or our health. I see it as the way of the future, and I hope more and more people do.
Awesome. Another millennial rocking our planet. I love it. Who inspired you to start using, you know, permaculture methods or organic? I don't know a lot either, but it sounds like they're pretty closely related to me. You know, both focus on building the soil, like you said, or what your growing medium is. So was that down in Buenos Aires or in
was more recently, to tell you the truth. Okay. I think I've just always been interested in ways to be more friendly to the environment, and I think it's not just me. I think it's something that our generation is moving towards, and I think that it's just a good business to be in, and it's a business you could feel good about when you come home at the end of the day, or maybe if you work from home, then you feel good that you're doing something that is promoting good behavior in society, I guess you could say. So I wouldn't say there's one inspiration, but I hope that more and more people are inspired to take up organic and earth-friendly agriculture practices.
Nice. I like that. Okay, so do you want to tell us about the aquaponic system?
Sure. So what makes our aquaponic system a bit different than every other aquaponic system, not every other, but most aquaponic systems out there in the market, or in terms of turnkey solutions, is that we've created a standalone feature, which is available separately as well, which monitors all of the water qualities, of the water quality, such as your pH, your dissolved oxygen, even we have an option with ORP, which I can explain later, which basically all of these different water quality, the variables and the statistical processes will fluctuate. And the idea is that if there's an abnormal fluctuation outside of an acceptable range, then you may have something going wrong in your system, and it'll alert you using either your smartphone or a small computer tablet system when there's a problem, so that you avoid, having dead fish, you avoid having inconsistencies in production, you avoid a lot of the mistakes that beginners make when they start systems as well. So even the feeding system will be automated, so it knows how much food to give the fish based on the temperature and different elements.
Okay, so let's back up a little, because...
Sure.
So I was there, and the thing that caught my eye the most was the way the food was growing in these vertical column things. So do you want to explain what that looks like, or how that works, or what those are?
We are using, for our vertical agriculture systems, for our vertical aeroponic systems, we're using the ZipGrow towers, which are manufactured by Wyoming-based company Bright Agrotech. And Nate Sterry over there is really the doctor of urban agriculture. I like to think of him as the Steve Jobs of, I don't know if you'd like that analogy, but But, you know, he's really building up a huge community of people who are able to start vertical green walls and vertical zip grow farms. And they have a lot of content available on the web, which makes it great for learning more about aquaponics and hydroponics. And also, as a side note, the systems that we're using, monitoring systems, and the probes are actually equipped with the American company's probes called Atlas, and they really have great probes, and a lot of people are using their probes and connecting them to different computer systems to monitor their different scientists and education systems using them as well. So
the probe is what tells the computer the probe, what's going on or something?
What these do, the probes allow us to have a constant knowledge of the pH and oxygen levels and ORP and temperature without having to be constantly testing it, which saves a lot of time and helps automate the ability. And without, you know, probes of these quality, we would have a difficult time managing our system so efficiently.
Okay. So then what was the other part? Like, I want to, like, describe to listeners, like, to me, it almost looked like rain gutters, but they're not rain gutters, but they kind of, like, that's, and then the plants are growing up out of the, like, it's like the straight vertical thing. Nobody can see me, like, making my hand motions.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of hard for people to imagine if they've never seen it before, but the vertical zip grow towers, what's great about them is, well, first of all, yes, they allow you to grow vertically, they allow you to create green walls, but for in terms of aquaponic uses, there's a lot of biological surface area in their matrix media, which is great for converting the waste from your fish to natural organic fertilizer for your plants. Small computer problem. That's what's great about them. In terms of visually, imagine a column, and you just have green plants, a 5 foot high column, and green plants are growing just out from the front side. But you know, when they're fully grown and they're growing very well, you won't even see the tower per se. Because you'll have so much lettuce or parsley or cilantro or tomato maybe growing up the side of your system as well. So
yeah, and it was just amazing how much food was growing in this tiny little space. So then the other thing you were telling me there is that when you were in New Orleans, you were installing them in school. Was it schools?
Yeah, so we were working with a couple of different types of vertical growing techniques in New Orleans. We installed these systems at schools. We installed 60 tower gardens on the top of a grocery store in New Orleans, and basically all of the herbs that were harvested on top of the grocery store were sold in the store below. So they were growing a lot of basil in the summertime and parsley in the wintertime. And then I also worked with a local chef in New Orleans to basically create a garden for him to harvest all the basil and hot peppers that he wanted, and other herbs as well for him. So it eliminated the constant need to order a small quantity of herbs and limit the need for, you know, intensive supply chain impact. So the idea is that you just harvest what you need, and then the plant will keep growing, and you just harvest it as you need it, instead of ordering a bunch of herbs and then having a bunch of them go to waste, and think of all the trucks that had to bring them all around the country to get you them there. So
definitely, Habs, I totally think, like, this is going to be the future of our, you know, grocery stores. Like, obviously they're not going to have every fruit and vegetable that you see in the store in the produce, but I really think you're going to start seeing these live aquaponic systems in the stores, just like you see a lobster tank full of lobsters at the seafood, you know, department and lots of stores. You're going to see these aquaponic systems where people can buy, you know, and probably starting with the culinary herbs like basil, and because especially you see those herbs in the store and it's just outrageous, you know, $3-4 for a few sprigs of an herb is just blows my mind away. And
herbs just keep growing, and you just harvest a little bit of them, and they keep growing, and you harvest a little bit of them. So,
and then lettuces is the other one, that especially because it would enable people like me to be able to be growing lettuce in the winter. And I know there's other solutions for people like me to be growing, but this looked like the space saver one. And I just, I don't know, I just love your thing. And then, of course, my listeners know I'm all about convenience. And if, so if you tell me I'm going to have something I can pick at eye level instead of having to bend down, you know, that's another great part of it. I mean, I suppose at some point you would, but and just I liked all the vegetables that I eat the most. Just standing there in this greenhouse, that was like my first like thought when I looked at it. I was like, wow, there's what I, you know, want to grow in my garden the most, the stuff that I buy the most frequently of everything. So all right, well, what else can we tell listeners? What about the fish? Like, people can eat the fish too.
Yeah, you can eat the fish. So depending on what climate you're in, you could be growing tilapia or trout or perch, or you could also be growing carp. You know, in terms of if you live in a climate where, you know, you have a lot of variation in your temperature and you don't want to have to be constantly cooling and constantly heating your water, carp are definitely a great, just a common carp fish are definitely great. Perch also can handle a wide temperature variety, but range, but they grow a little slower. So it really depends on what you're looking for in terms of fish. If you live in a really hot area, obviously a tropical fish like tilapia. If you live in a really, really cold area, trout. In terms of temperature regulation in your water tank is really important for aquaponic growers, as many of your listeners who are aquaponic growers will tell you. So if you have the opportunity to dig your tank into the ground, it definitely helps regulate the temperature, insulates the tank a bit.
You know, I was thinking these would go good in basements.
Yeah, well, the only problem is that I wouldn't want to be growing in a basement in terms of my lettuces. I'm sure you have plenty of people out there telling me I do hydroponics in my basement, but I prefer to take advantage of the natural sunlight when it comes to growing. Now, if you are an avid plumber, perhaps you could plumb something up where your fish are in your basement and your plants are outside. That would be ideal, but it requires a little extra plumbing. And in terms of having a greenhouse to prevent, you know, potential wind events or storms, a greenhouse is definitely an excellent option. We're working with a Belgian-based ACD, or ACD as they call them, and they make really strong greenhouses with glass that you can, you know, throw a rock at it and it'll still be still be there. So
okay, cool. Lots of good information there. Okay, so I kind of interrupted you when I asked the question about the fish. Was there something else you were going to tell us?
No. I was just going to mention the greenhouses that we were using.
Oh, okay. All right. Do you want to tell us, like, something that grew really well this year or something? Like, what's growing the best in there? Or is that just the lettuces and the herbs?
In terms of your vertical systems, and I would really suggest your leafy greens, tomatoes, parsley will grow like crazy, basil will grow like crazy, kale, but, you know, and also it's also good to have a large biodiversity in organic gardening, to have some flowers that attract beneficial insects, and maybe to introduce some beneficial insects yourself, like ladybugs or green lacewings. You know, if you really want to prevent having to use pesticides and be spraying your plants, I recommend planting some great. They sell mixes of flower, beneficial flowers, and I know in the U.S. they sell Johnny seeds, and maybe in Europe they call it buffet pour les insectes, buffet for the insects. Basically, that's important to me, and hopefully other people as well. I think I mentioned everything.
Yeah, I just bought some chive seeds because I know the bees, they're like the first things that bloom here. And so I was like, we need to plant more chives for our bees. And then, all right, so now I keep asking about the vertical because that's what I see, but you keep saying if you're going to do, so is there a different kind, like that's horizontal or something?
Well, there are definitely different kinds of aquaponic systems. We don't have a horizontal aquaponic system. What we do is we create a permaculture bed, we call it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a mix between radial chipped wood, biochar, actually logs from the forest, and what that do, it'll break down over time and continue to provide you with nutrients for your plants, so that you don't have to add a fertilizer or anything like that. And then you can just continue adding compost on top of your bed every year. And I'm just learning about. I'm sure your listeners or you've had other podcasters talk about this, but I'm just learning what they call in France is a green fertilizer, and it's the concept of planting a crop that doesn't necessarily grow anything that you're gonna consume right away. Are you familiar with that concept?
Like a cover crop.
Yeah, I guess that's what's called in English. It's the idea is planting something that in permaculture that's not going to give you a direct yield of anything tangible, but it will provide a beneficial. It'll help improve your soil and your microbial communities, and I don't know if you have had other podcasters talk about this more. Maybe you have some knowledge.
Well, so my husband for one's been bugging me to get cover crops, and then I went to this Aero workshop and met the amazing Dave Oyen from Timeless Seeds, who this woman, Liz Carlisle, actually wrote a book called The Lentil Underground. And in her book, she interviews all these Montana farmers who are basically they're selling the lentils, but they kind of like follow that whole thing where they will grow a cover crop to put the nutrients into the soil and then turn it over, and like a big part of her book was responding to that question. How do you put that rotation into your soil? How do we get farmers? We know this is the best practices. Why are farmers in the Midwest not doing this? And one of the things was that they were worried that banks wouldn't give them loans because they didn't want their field growing this crop that wasn't going to be, and how to fit it into their rotation. And different questions like that. So, mostly I've learned about it this year since I started my podcast, but I have had quite a few guests come on and talk about it. Bob Quinn was another one who was in the book. And he grows this camu wheat that they sell a lot to Italy, of all places. It's like one of his biggest exports for pasta, because it's a little bit of it's not gluten-free, I don't think, but it doesn't make people have that gluten reaction as much. So I've kind of learned about it, and then we just planted some clover, which would be one of those, and I bought some buckwheat from Lisa Ziegler, who's been one of my guests. She's a flower farmer. And so I've kind of, been learning a lot about it this year. Mostly.
Excellent. Yeah, I think that's definitely something that we all should start to get into in our gardens, and definitely the payback. It'll help improve your environment and improve your soil quality. So it seems like it's a good investment.
Yeah, and because one of the things that we struggle with the most here, and like my listeners know, we just got 4 sheep. And when I first got the sheep, my friends and family were like, why did you get sheep? And I'm like, well, the sheep are here to poop because, finding quality soil as we expand our garden. Like, we just dug a well so we can really expand. And then, of course, right away, it's like, well, where are we going to get, you know, fertilizer for the garden? Where are we going to get dirt? Where are we going to get, you know, the compost that Mike and I produced from just two people isn't really enough to, you know, do the plans that he wants to do. So, you know, building that soil and getting that, you know, having a cover crop grow is a huge way to make, to improve our soil, I guess is what I'm getting at. And especially those cover crops are nice because in Montana, that's a lot of what's in the book too, because especially the farmers that Liz Carlisle interviewed in the Lent Underground are mostly on the east side, and that's a lot drier even so than where Mike and I are. We're kind of in the mountainous part on the western side of the state, but over on the eastern side, they have much more drought to deal with, and so they're good crops that will grow where you don't have to irrigate. So it's another plus there.
Excellent. One last thing I wanted to add also was that we're launching our Pioneer Citizen Community in Europe, and we're essentially searching for 30 testers of our solutions in Europe who will, you know, be able to test our solution, provide, help collect data, you know, using the Atlas probes, and provide feedback about what we can improve for when we commercialize our system to the big public and to the public, and perhaps, you know, hopefully it'll be available in the U.S. Within the next year. But if anybody knows anybody in Europe that's an avid gardener or that's not an avid gardener and wants to start gardening, definitely an interesting opportunity.
All right. Well, tell them a little more about how they apply for that, because I do have 287 listeners, I'm pretty sure, mostly close to Paris, but in Europe. And then I think 80 of them are like in Lyon, which isn't too far.
Oh, excellent.
And then there's listeners all over. I mean, I don't have no idea how they find me or what. I mean, I guess it's they search on iTunes. But
yeah.
So, well, tell people how to find out about that. Great.
Well, they can go to myfood.eu. And then go over to the Become a Pioneer Citizen button and fill out the form, and we'll get in contact with you shortly after that.
Nice. Okay. I bet people are going to like that idea. All right. So let's see. What other questions can I ask you? Like, so you've had other gardens besides this, right? Like, what's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something you got to force yourself to get out there and do when you get to work in a regular garden, or even with the aquaponics? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, one thing about when I was working with hydroponic systems for a while, and with hydroponic systems, you the idea is that you're not doing organic gardening. You are using synthetic fertilizers, and because of that, you're not really trying to build up your microbial community. You're really trying to keep your system just as clean as possible. So when I was working with hydroponics, I was cleaning my hydroponic systems a lot, and the act of just cleaning plastic over and over again, that was probably my least favorite, you know, part of gardening, because cleaning plastic seems pretty far away from organic gardening, huh? Sitting there scrubbing plastic. But with aquaponic systems, not really necessary, depending on the system you have, to be cleaning your plastic all the time, because you actually want a lot of that biofilm and good stuff to be growing in there to help you build your community. So I'd definitely say that's something that I'm happy about getting back into aquaponics.
All right. I'm happy about that. And I hope if there's any people out there growing the ever-growing medical marijuana out there, doing it the hydroponic way, they consider one of these systems. I hope that they're going to start going this way, because that's something that really bugs me, this whole medical marijuana thing that's going on. Because, one, we have all these people growing indoors now. So we've got all this new electric system, you know, an electric use going to grow something that I personally think should be growing outside as a regular crop, but it's not. And then also, like, I'm thinking about all the chemicals these people are putting into their systems, because people aren't just smoking it. They're eating all these edibles and they're doing all these crazy things. And I'm like, What chemicals? Who's watching this? Like, nobody's regulating it. Nobody's doing anything. And so I hope if there are people out there that they kind of think that maybe this might be a solution for them to think
Yeah, I
about
mean,
too.
it definitely seems to me that, a lot of people, if you look at a lot of what's available in terms of, if you're into hydroponics, whether it's for marijuana or for fruits and vegetables, there's a lot of products out there that are really expensive, and that as a vegetable gardener, you're like, really, am I going to buy all that stuff for my vegetable garden? No. There's much better ways. But then when they're growing other things, then people are not quite as afraid to start using all these things because their profit margins are a bit higher.
Right. Good point. Yeah. So that's one of my just little pet peeves. Sorry to get off on that tangent. Tell us, so what is your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Favorite activity? I like to, check on my seedlings and see how they sprouted and watch the basically, see it's fun to see the process of from seed to, moment when you can actually be sitting down and enjoying a nice meal and knowing that you grew this. Perhaps one day I will actually, it'd be great to actually start collecting seeds from plants as well that I've grown, and then you really have almost a closed loop system. Because you're not buying seeds from anyone, that would be really that would be the full full return, I feel
Yeah.
like.
That's one of the other big things I've learned from my podcast this year. Like, I had no idea that it made a difference if you bought seeds locally or you bought seeds every year. So Mike and I really have been starting to save our seeds more, and I've had a lot of guests come on. And there's actually a big seed fair in Montana coming up a week from Saturday on the 19th. Maybe it is this Saturday on the 19th already, about sharing seeds and the difference between, one, seeds that get acclimated to your area are going to produce better vegetables and better fruits for your, if you have seeds that have been acclimated already or come from a local person. Like, I had no idea how much of a difference it makes, just even, the second year that you plant them. And then I forgot what my other point was. But yeah, it is really nice to grow something yourself. So, tell us, what's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
Best gardening advice I received, just to in terms of if you're growing in a soil or a hydroponic based, a cocoa type medium, is just to make sure that have just the right amount of water. That's a good, make sure that your water, that your soil, it's not too, it's well, it's able to dry out easily, and it's able to get wet easily, and that was very helpful to know, to not have a lot of what's the word, root rot, and not have your plants dying off when they're very young.
Yeah, that's more true than you know. And Chris Blanchard, who has a podcast called Farmer to Farmer, was my guest, and he talks more about the business of farming now. He's kind of like retired from he I think he had a farm for like 25 years or something, or definitely did hands-on for a long time, and now he's more into helping other farmers grow their businesses. And he said that one of the biggest things he sees a difference is just water, when they really focus on their irrigation levels and make sure, like, water can improve a crop, like, I don't know, 30% or something, 30% more. You can get a huge, drastic increase in production just by really regulating your water appropriately.
And
So
last
that's
summer, for
great.
instance, I was able to do my own little research study working in a greenhouse outside Paris, and I did one system where I had just cocoa and perlite mixed in a pot, and another system where I had cocoa, perlite, and then clay balls in the bottom, the biotin balls. And when I put biotin balls on the bottom of the pot, I had significantly higher higher growth rate. So just having that little bit extra ability for the plant's roots not to get stuck in the pot allowed the plant to grow a lot faster, healthier. So.
Ooh, I like that. And I think that's going to inspire listeners to think about creating some of their own experiments. It's making me think, oh, I should try that. Put two things right next to each other and try a little different thing. I know last year I posted some pictures of some peppers that Mike had grown in two different dirts that we bought. And you could really see a difference in the the different soils that he used from two different hardware stores. How about you? Do you have a favorite tool that you like to use? Like if you had to move, which you've done quite a bit, is there like a tool you carry with you or a tool that you really like?
A gardening tool?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was always, when I was working in New Orleans, I was always carrying my pH meter around. That was really helpful for going around testing my hydroponic systems, but I'm excited that with the aquaponic systems that we're developing now, our pH meters will be integrated into our systems, and I can just check on my smartphone or you know, on a monitoring screen what my pH levels are. So maybe that's more as a hydroponic technician. So
that's okay. There's going to be more and more of you guys out there all the time, and I know millennials and your smartphones are probably... I mean, I'm pretty addicted to my phone as it is. I tell my friends all the time, I have a relationship with my phone for sure. And like, I gave a speech at a Toastmasters meeting once and I was like, my life is in my phone, and they just seem shocked. But for sure.
I did Toastmasters for a little while. I like Toastmasters.
Yeah. How about a favorite internet resource? Somewhere you like to
favorite
go?
Favorite internet resource.
Yeah.
Make a broad statement and say Google.
Yeah, you're not the first
because,
one.
Sure. Because you can search, if you have any gardening question, you search in Google and it brings you to anywhere else that may have the right answer for you. So.
Yeah.
And YouTube is great too, but that's also part of Google, so can't win.
But some people don't realize that you need to actually go to YouTube on Google and search YouTube's thing. I mean, it probably comes up on Google too, but I know that sometimes when I'll go to YouTube specifically and then search from there, or I'll type in like whatever I'm looking for, YouTube video, if I want to. Like, yeah. It's kind of a, I don't know. I guess I, maybe it comes up on Google all the time. How about a favorite reading material? Like, is there a book or a magazine that you can recommend?
Not in particular off the top of my head.
That's okay.
You know, I've been, there's some some interesting speeches on YouTube just to learn the concepts of permaculture and definitely a lot of books out there too. I have a French permaculture book now that I've been starting.
Cool. I bought a really cool French gardening magazine that even when I brought it home, Mike found some interesting things in there that he liked, and just that was interesting looking through all the magazines I liked when I was over there in the newsstand, and there were a lot of gardening ones. Because, you know, like probably the most recommended book on my show, I haven't really actually done the data, but I'm pretty sure, is this guy Jean-Martin Fortier, who I know he's up in Canada, but I have a feeling, you know, a lot of it are French principles, and it seems like the French know quite a bit about gardening, and certainly they've been doing it.
Yeah, the French definitely have a, you know, they have a strong attachment to the terroir, as they call it. You know, it's not just about, you know, that's one reason why that the French are a little bit, it's taken them a little longer to adapt to the concept of soilless agriculture or agriculture au sol, because they believe that every place where your, you know, where your food grows, it changes the flavor, and there's certain soil conditions and sunlight in every region can affect the flavor, and if something's being grown in a controlled greenhouse, then it's not going to have that specific flavor, and so, you know, that's, but when it comes to me, in my personal opinion, when it comes to things like lettuces and parsley, you know, it doesn't have to have the flavor of a specific region for me. maybe people out there, your listeners, will have some comments about that. It'd be interesting to hear what they have to say.
Okay. Do you have any, like, I usually ask about, like, business advice to listeners, but because you have, like, this amazing, I'm just so excited to hear your story and your journey, and you're doing these cool things, and you're reaching out there, and, like, I was so scared. Look at me. I'm 48, and I finally braved up enough to go to another country where people speak another language, and you've already been to two major countries, and not only, like, you've really embraced it. Like, you're going over there. You're, like, working with these people. You're studying in these other countries, and I just think you're going to inspire people to, like, go out there and do some really cool things. So, like, do you have advice for, like, and then on top of that, you have, like, this whole business piece of you besides the agriculture, like, you're combining these great, things for our environment, but also, like, you know, the economy, people are struggling, so you're finding solutions there. And, I don't know, something to tell maybe some kid who's, you know, in college right now or hasn't gone to college or thinking about starting a new business, even if they're, you know, 40 like me, because I'm dying to get my master's degree. Yeah. Anyway, just, something about the school piece or business, I don't know, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely different for, you know, depending on the country you're in. In the U.S., you know, when I was finishing college, I was asked to give a TED talk, and I talked about how you should become an entrepreneur, don't do the 9-to-5, work in a restaurant on the weekends and half the week, and then start your business the other half. And there's a lot of people doing that, in maybe more so in the U.S. than in New Orleans and in different cities like that around the country. I would say that, you know, definitely, you know, I'm mixed, because part of me says go to school for what you're going to do, because you should have the knowledge ahead of time, and the other half of me says, you know, you can learn it as you go along. So I'm somewhere in between what my advice is. But if you have the drive and to have a couple things, you know, sources of income while you're first starting out, if you don't have the prior education in this field, then go for it. If you're short on resources, then maybe first go to school for it. and if you're not willing to take that risk, definitely going to school doesn't hurt. So for horticulture or whatever it is you end up wanting to do, in terms of business skills, it doesn't hurt either to have a degree in business, but there's a lot of people who've gotten pretty far in this world without a degree in business. So there's so many options out there.
Yeah. Awesome. I think that's perfect. Okay. Ready for my final question? It's kind of a doozy.
Yeah.
If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, Kevin, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Well, obviously, you know, part of my mission has been, you know, the one issue that I'm tackling really is how can we shorten the supply chain for food? So, you know, obviously, people eating more local food, people driving less in general would be great. If they can, you know, in Paris, in the U.S., they understand, because we often have really inefficient public transportation systems. But in Paris, I don't understand why there are so many cars everywhere when there's so many metro lines available. So I think, Just seeing people, you know, I mean, maybe it's a status thing, you know, just take the metro if it's there. As far as those people who don't have the luxury of having a great public transit system, try to help your, you know, I'd like to see more projects, government projects to help people, to help the government develop more public transit. And so that's my little preaching to the choir for now.
Awesome. I love it. That's one of my husband's big things is people traveling and spending way too much money on gas and moving things around in trucks. So,
well, for instance, I want to, for my garden, I'm living in Paris. Sorry to interrupt. I'm living in Paris, and I want to start, I'm starting a permaculture garden here, and I want a source of hay. And, I can't just go out to the field and pick it up myself. I don't have a car. It's not really, there's not fields just right inside Paris area accessibly. So, there are times when having a source of transit would be amazing, but having a car and using it to do something that is going to help you and help others, that's acceptable still in my mind.
Yeah. And, there's a great organization down in Missoula, Montana, where it's called the MUD, which is the Missoula Urban Development Project. And they have the coolest thing about them, they have this tool library. And one of the tools at the library is a pickup truck just for that purposes. So people can just rent this one truck if
That's
they
awesome.
Need to haul a load of compost or hay. Or like a big load, once. I think it's like $20 to borrow the truck something like that might work over there. I was just going to say, and you certainly didn't interrupt me at all, was one thing I noticed about in Paris, and I took a lot of pictures of bike stands, especially at the metro, and I just love their bike lanes and how many people ride bikes and then also drive scooters or motorcycles or motorbikes. And just, I don't know, I guess maybe because, I grew up outside of New York City originally, didn't seem to me like there were a lot of cars. I thought the transit was used pretty well, but maybe if you live there. Did you want to say anything about what it's like? Like if somebody was thinking of moving to another country to go to school or to go study like in Europe, like what are, like, do you have any tips or hints?
If I had to give a tip or hint, part of the reason why I moved over here is I have a French girlfriend. And so if you meet somebody from that country and you've always wanted an experience of living in another country, and I would say take that opportunity, go move to that other country and try life out. And if it's not for you, it's not for you, but it's definitely something, a new experience that can really change your life, moving in general, but it's, it's not easy. There's a lot of adjustments that you have to make in terms of getting the use of the way the local government works and having your visa and all those, and the language and all these issues. It's definitely not something that's easy. It's an adventure.
Do you speak fluent French?
I'm getting there. I've been here for about a year and a half, but I didn't speak a word when I got here. So
that's my question. So what did you do when you first got there, not speaking?
Well,
relied on your girlfriend a lot?
Yeah, I relied on her a lot. And I also was living in the City University, which is a campus for international students.
Oh, okay.
And there are a lot of, not many Americans that I met, but everybody in my generation, from all the countries, most countries around Europe, they're fluent in English. So it almost spoiled me for the first year. And then once I left the City University, I really had to start improving my French if I wanted to talk to people.
Yeah, because I noticed, like, as soon as I left your booth and went inside at the ag thing, I could hardly find anybody to talk to. Like, nobody could barely speak any English in there. And then also, like, the one day I left Paris and went out into the countryside, I went to Rouen and Giverny. Nobody could hardly understand me there either. Both of those, especially I found this farmer's market in Giverny, and I couldn't really connect with anybody or make any. They wouldn't even like take my, one guy took my paper who could barely speak a little English, but it was very hard outside of Paris. Whereas you do kind of get spoiled in Paris. You can find people, most people speak pretty good English there.
Yeah. The other day I called up a potential supplier and I asked them if we could open up an account with them, and they told me, "Oh, we're not interested," and they hung up. I guess my friends are still. I need to work on my French a little bit.
That was the hardest for me. I realized, like, I've totally fell to pieces. The two most, like, important things, when I'd ask somebody, how much is this? And they'd say, I would have, like, they'd start to talk and I'd just lose it. And then the other one was directions. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be like, how do I get? And just totally, unfortunately, I had really good maps with me. But, yeah, if somebody explained right. And one day I got on the bus going the wrong direction at 10 o'clock at night and, like, came to the end of the bus stop. And the bus driver's like, you have to get off the bus here. but it turned out okay. Another bus came quickly, but directions are more important. Like, and you think numbers, yeah. I remember being in French in high school, like, oh, who cares about these numbers? I don't want to count. But you don't realize when you're like trying to come up with change, or you want to know how much it costs to take the bus or to go in somewhere, or you want to buy a souvenir for someone, kind of gets kind of important there or at the grocery store. Sure. Yeah. Okay, how about just a final inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into that dirt or start their own aquaponics garden?
Motivational? I would say just get started, because in terms of gardening, is you learn from experience. So like anything in life, just start planting seeds, make some mistakes, watch some tutorials online, read some resources, and listen to some organic potting, gardening podcasts that should help anybody get started. And that's my advice.
Thank you, Kevin. Tell everybody how to connect with you.
You can connect with me at kevin@myfood.eu. That's Kevin, Kevin, at myfood.eu.
Okay, and the website is just myfood.eu, right?
Exactly.
And I'll put the link to that in my show notes. And just so people, like, I don't know, when I Googled it, it wouldn't come up, or somehow it came up. Like, I had to put it like myfoodspace.eu or something, and it came up. But when I typed in the space bar, myfood.eu, and it came because I'm using Safari and not Google Chrome, like I should be, maybe, or something.
Well, what that means is that we need to work on our press and have more people like yourself include us in their articles, and then the search crawler will improve and we'll move higher. So,
oh, really?
You are
maybe
helping.
I need
us
to do that too. Okay, cool. Yeah. Thanks, Kevin, for being such a wonderful guest and inspiring everybody today. Another millennial rock in the world.
Thank you, Jackie.
This is Jackie Marie Beyer, and I am just hoping that you're as excited to be learning and gardening this spring as I am. And so I'm really wondering what you're up to this spring. And I'm super excited to announce that I am finally going to launch my Facebook group, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. So I really want to hear about your journey, and I really hope that you will come there and share your questions, your successes, your challenges, your pictures, your connect with the other listeners in the audience, and what's your vision for the future, or what's your vision for your garden, for your organic oasis? You know, are you planting flowers? What are you doing? You know, what project are you taking on this spring, this summer? You know, I really want to learn, what do you want to know? Is there, what kind of guests do you like? You know, who have you enjoyed? Who would you like to hear more of? You know, what topics are you really enjoying? You know, is it raising honeybees or planting perennials, or, what kind of seeds are you looking for? You know, are they annuals, perennials? You know, what kind of vegetables, what kind of herbs are you planting? What flowers? Do you have any questions that we can answer? You know, what guests have you liked the most? You know, so what is there something you want me to find out? Like, I'm really going to try to be as active in Facebook, the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook page, and the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group. So, if you're interested in, learning more and reaching out and connecting with other people, especially, the great thing about it is all of a sudden, you might meet three people who are in your area. Just like since I started my podcast, I met Robin Kelson and Laura Behenna. So it was so fun to see them last week. And Pamela Lund, who, if you haven't heard her episode, she's just got a great story. Robin's been in the top 10 since she aired. But to meet these, people, and then I went to the Aero Conference and met more people that are living locally near me here in Montana, that I never knew till I started my podcast. And so if you join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook group, you'll probably meet people in your area. And then maybe I'll be able to find some people from the other states, because I think I'm up to like state 20 or 21 still. So there's still more states that I haven't interviewed people from than states that I have. One of these days I'm going to read that list and try to get some people, some listeners. Listeners always make great guests. I think you've all got more knowledge than you think to share, and some answer that somebody else has been looking for. So if you want to come on and share your gardening journey, you know, I'm always looking. But today I really want to talk about, you know, join our group. You know, let me know, what can I do for you? Even if you don't want to do the Facebook thing, I totally understand. Or if you have another channel that you like, you know, reach out to me, email me, go to the website. You know, you can connect with me. There's the get in touch page. There's a listener survey on there where you can, you know, which basically is just easy questions about, you know, what's your biggest challenge that I can help you with. But just most of all, I hope if you want to, you will come join the Facebook group, connect with me, and just let's change the world together. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow.